today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
It's that time, friends. Time for Gary Ho Ho Hoey. Happy holidays, everybody, from the Talkin' Rock podcast. Yes, Gary Hoey, guitar wizard, is my guest today. We talk about Christmas music. He has a new album on the way called Neon Highway, which will be out in 2019. He talks about what a fun year 2018 was.
It was a fun year, man. I did a bunch of rock and roll fantasy camps.
He told me about the approach he takes to writing new music.
My big thing is I like to go on the road and tour and meet fans and live life and then get inspiration and then come home and write. I'm not one of these guys that sits on the bus with the journal.
Although Gary Hoey's known as a solo artist, he did audition for some bands in the late 1980s. He drops some names on us a little bit later on, and then he talks about going solo.
I just decided I wanted to be happy, you know, so I just took a solo career because it was really hard to keep a band together, you know, and keep everybody going in the same direction.
That's just for starters, and oh yeah, he does plot his guitar and shred just a little bit. It's Gary Hoey today on the Talkin' Rock podcast.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Thank you, as always, for checking out the Talkin' Rock podcast. I do appreciate it. I also appreciate those 5 stars you guys have been giving us, as well as reviews. Jennifer, thanks for the review. Wolf is out there. Thanks for the review as well. You can do that as well. And like I said, 5 stars. I'm trying to get the rankings and the ratings up, and with your help, we can do that. Now, in the last podcast, I kind of laid out, you know, a mission for you guys. The Twisted fans out there, Jamie from the band told me about a song they're covering for their record, which comes out in the first quarter of 2019. Well, you guys responded, gave us some stars, so therefore, I told you I'd put this at the beginning of the podcast, so you can check it out. If you didn't get a chance to listen to Madrox, go back and listen to it. But here's what he said about a cover song that's coming out on their next album.
I'll let you in on a small tidbit. We actually did. I'm a super duper, it's not rock, but I'm a super duper Duran Duran fan. I've loved Duran Duran since
Hungry Like the Wolf, of course. I've got some vinyl at home, yeah.
Yes, that is the remake. That's the one we chose to do.
Really?
I've been a fan ever since Seven and the Ragged Tiger, man. And I'm like, yeah, for sure. So we had to do a cover, and we did Hungry Like the Wolf. And we did this like weird, it's like we took the song and like totally deconstructed it and did it in a different way, tone. So it's weird, but I can't wait for people to hear that too. So there's another little exclusive Meltdown exclusive. Nobody knows that but you, man. So make sure you let everybody know that.
There you have it. Hungry Like the Wolf. I love it. Duran Duran. I may have to swing by the studio on my way to work and get a sneak peek of it for myself. Maybe I'll take my phone in there and just record a little bit and throw it on a podcast coming up in the future. In the meantime, Gary Hoey, man, this is his time of year to get out there and a tour. If you're anywhere in the Southeast Michigan area, he's playing up in Auburn Hills at Callahan's, but he's got tour dates all over the place. I know this podcast goes all over the world, but also carried on some of our radio stations and, you know, in Boston and Philly and different things like that. So just punch up Gary's website, which I link to in the description of the show. In the meantime, always great to talk with Gary Ho Ho Hoey today on Talkin' Rock. How's things, Gary?
I'm doing good, man. How are you, brother?
I'm doing great. We're just suffering away through this Detroit winter, which hasn't even technically started yet, but it's winter time here already.
I know. We're here in New Hampshire. We had like 10 degree weather when I left town, and I went to New York and it warmed up. So I'm like, okay. And you guys got snow, bro?
Just a little bit, not too much, but it's like in the 20s and in low 30s, you know, the whole thing. So.
Yep, it's cold. It's back.
But you're coming through the Motor City December 8th at Callahan's, where you've been the last couple of years, bringing your big ho-ho-hoey party back to the Motor City.
Yeah, man, we're excited. We just did a week of shows. We finished at Daryl's house in New York on Sunday. And, yeah, man, it's just great to be back out doing the holiday show.
So Daryl's house, Daryl Hall?
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep,
yeah.
Hall, yeah.
Does he have like a bar or something, or a place, or is it the place you see on TV, or what is it?
No, he has a club. He has a club restaurant kind of bar that's in New York, Pawling, New York, and P-A-W, is it Pawling? Yeah, P-A-W-L-I-N-G, Pawling, New York, and it's a cool place, man. Just, it's got a great vibe to it. and he has the live stream set up there, you know, where the guy does all the live streams from there. It's an amazing, elaborate setup. And they have great food, you know, really good food, which when you're in a band is a good thing.
Yeah, right.
Good meal on the road. So, you know, good cooking. And, yeah, and it's just kind of vibe there, man. And the audience is real good. It's always fun.
Now, without stopping at, like, nice restaurants and stuff, how often do you have a good meal on the road?
Well, you know, it's funny. We get a lot of catering, you know, we get a lot of stuff at the venues, obviously. But we do like to try to find good food, man. You know, like we actually have in our rider, it's like no pub food because, okay, you know, if we show up every day and it's jalapeno poppers and, you know, and friend deep fried, you know, everything and cheeseburgers, we'll die.
Right.
so we try to get the venue to get us something, you know, a little healthier. And then we still eat junk food, though. You know, we still do. But we try to avoid it every day, you know.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've seen probably lots of cheese platters and vegetable and fruit platters, right?
Yes, exactly. If we see another deli tray with cold cut meat on it, we're going to die. But guess what? If we show up at a venue and there isn't one there, we're crying.
That's right. So,
you know what I mean? We're like, you know, I miss the cheese curling up on the edges. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, it's like this cheese is too big for the. This is a complete disaster.
All right, it's Spinal Tap. The bread doesn't fit the meat. The meat's hanging off the edges. I told you, I wanted it. It's circumferences, not fitting the meat of the circumferencing.
I should see if I could get at least one Spinal Tap quote from every person I interview in 2019 without them even knowing it. I should try to pull that off.
Can you do that? Do that, man. This one goes to 11.
Man, we could do this all day. But so speaking of touring and stuff, how's your 2018 been touring, you know, outside of what you're doing now?
It's been good, man. It was a great year for us. We went over to Europe with Beth Hart. We did another blues tour over in Europe, and it was a fun year, man. I did a bunch of rock and roll fantasy camps. We did Joe Perry and Jason Bonham, but Joe Perry got sick recently, didn't make it, the poor guy. We did a lot of touring, man. We did a lot of stuff around the country. We did a bunch of festivals. And, you know, it's great because we're coming to the end of the whole Dust and Bones record. We're moving on. We just finished a new record about a week before we went on the road. We mastered a new album. It's called Neon Highway, which is coming out in the new year. So it's nice to have a new record done, you know, something ready to go. So this next year should be a good one.
Yeah, I think when I talked to you last time, you had played me like a little bit of a snippet of it. I'm like, wait a second, we're almost near the end of the year here. Where is this record? But it's finished, huh?
It's finished, yeah, man. We recorded the basic tracks, oh yeah, at least a year ago. And then we just had such a busy year, man. It was like piecemeal. I would get off the road and I would finish a song, you know, and then I'd go back on the road and I'd try to write a lyric and I'd come home and I'm like, the lyrics aren't coming today. You know what I mean? My manager would be like, when's this record going to be done? And I would say, well, I'm not building sheds. It doesn't come with a kit. You know, it's called creativity. we're not doing Legos here. We're making songs.
Right.
Yeah.
and you know, when you're out there touring and stuff, I have to imagine that even though you're on the road and you're doing things and whatnot, your mind is probably a little bit still back in your studio, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, funny for me, when I'm in the studio, I get cabin fever and I want to get out. And then as soon as I get on the road, I'm like, oh, I miss my studio. It's so awesome. And then as soon as I come home, I'm like, you know, I'm loving the studio again. So it's a love-hate thing for me. But my big thing is I like to go on the road and tour and meet fans and live life and then get inspiration and then come home and write. I'm not one of these guys that sits on the bus with a journal, you know, journaling everything as it goes on. I kind of absorb it and then try to write it later.
Yeah. The rock and roll fantasy camp things are really cool. Now, you just talked about the one with Joe Perry and Jason Bonham, but Joe was already sick by the time that one took place recently, you're saying?
No, he was supposed to be on a jet plane flying to Florida that day, and he went and played with Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden and had some, you know, something happen where he wasn't feeling good.
Okay, so yeah. Yeah, so it was right about that time, like about a month ago or so, eh?
Exactly. It was just literally like the night he was at the concert, he was supposed to be getting in a jet and flying to Florida, and he ended up going to the hospital. So we had to tell all the campers, Joe's not coming. And we had a big prayer thing. We all just prayed for him, man. We had a big prayer thing, and then we looked at each other and we went, time to party.
I just interviewed Satchel the other day, and he doesn't have a guitar when I'm talking to him. You're the only one. That makes you unique, I suppose. So
you don't talk to him, he doesn't go.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't do that, as a matter of fact. But
if I ever called you when I had a cold, I could probably just go, and you'd know what I was saying.
Yeah, it reminds me of like the Steve Vai record with David Lee Roth.
Well, it does, exactly. It reminds me of the Linus and Lucy, Charlie Brown, every time the teachers talk.
Yeah, the teachers, that's right. Man, I'll tell you what, I've run into a bunch of guys that know you lately. I was out Friday night in Niagara Falls with Bumblefoot.
Oh, man, I love Bumblefoot.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I've known him now we've become really good friends over the past year and a half or so since I met him for the first time. Kenny Wayne Shepherd was here, of course, as you know, about a month or so ago. I texted you. I'm like, give me something about Kenny Wayne Shepherd, man. And it's like, that guy is such a good dude.
He is. He's very cool.
And then when I was with Bumblefoot the other night, some of the Killer Dwarf crew guys were hanging out with us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Rob and Mike. Cool, so, yeah, and they were talking that, you know, you guys had done some stuff, in the past, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a great time touring together with Bumblefoot, man. He's just a great guy, and he's like a walking encyclopedia of music.
It's funny, he's up there on stage, and they're kind of doing this thing. It was David Ellefson and him, and Dave would tell stories and whatnot and show how he created some of the songs. Well, anyways, when Bumblefoot's up there, the guy is so, like, scientific. He's telling people, well, and everything he said went over my head. But he's like, yeah, so I thought, what if I cut this chord in half and do this? I'm like, oh, my God. He's just so, like, scientific about the whole thing.
He is. He's very advanced. I'll be talking to him. He's like, Gary, yes, and then you'll do. And I'm like, okay, you know. And then he plays like the whole Michael Jackson, or he'll play like the Beatles White album, you know, like with one hand. Like he's very talented.
I was with him last year, and he did like the second side of Abbey Road.
See, there you go. That's what I'm talking about. Or you could mention, like, you could go Iron Maiden, and all of a sudden he's into the first album. You know, he is an encyclopedia of music. See, I don't. I do data dumps. I open my back of my head, and things dump out, and I have to bring in new stuff.
Is that what happens?
You know, I only know the 12 songs we're playing tonight. That's pretty much it, bro.
So tell me more about this new record on Neon Highway. Is it just you and the band? You got any special guests? What's going on with it?
Yeah, it's it's us. It's a band, you know, that I'm currently touring, AJ and Matt. And we do have a few guests on the album. One guest I'm real excited about is my son. My son, Ian Hoey, is actually playing on a song with me on a blues tune, man. He's cutting loose at 16 years old at the track.
That's cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
You know what I mean? I didn't even have to cut it together like digital editing. Like, he actually did a good job. So I'm really proud of him. And then one of my favorite guitar players is Eric Gales. He's playing on a song with me, just throwing down hard. Who else is on the record? There's my good friend from Texas, Lance Lopez, who's a really good Texas blues player. Mm-hmm. He's on it. And another guy named Josh Smith, who's one of Joe Bonamassa's favorite guitar players in the world. So Josh is one of those guys that, you know, everybody doesn't know him yet, but he's a monster. So he's playing on the record.
Yeah. Are you friends with Joe Bonamassa?
I am. I've known Joe, since the old guitar shows when I used to see him with his dad and stuff. And I played with Joe a few times and we jammed on stage and stuff. He's a great guy. And I could definitely consider him a good friend. Yeah.
Now, the name of the record on Neon Highway, you know, I can't believe in 2018 there hasn't been a name of an album called Neon Highway. But it makes perfect sense, I suppose. It reminds me of a band traveling down the road and just stopping in places with neon in the windows for drinks, for late night food, for anything to just keep going to get on to the next gig.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it, man. It's looking for that neon, whether it says, you know, saloon, tavern, or barbecue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
we're looking for it, and there's something about the mystique and the nostalgia of neon to me in general, you know. And the song I wrote called Neon Highway, it's when you hear it, it sounds very much like an old David Lynch movie. It's got this super eerie, just like the record's just a little warped, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in a kind of a cool way, and the way I played the take was like a one take thing. I couldn't replicate it. I couldn't redo it. I'm like, that's it. It's done. And so, you know, I ended up naming it Neon Highway, and I thought, man, that makes total sense for this record. So it kind of fell together.
Yeah, it's very Americana.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're working on the artwork right now, actually, for it. I can't wait. It's going to be really cool.
And do the words of this song go, on a dark neon highway, cool wind in my hair? No, nothing like that. Just
yeah, that's the opening line, man. It does.
Gary, you're quite a writer. I knew it. I knew it. Man, what
yeah, it does. It goes, you know.
Go ahead. You can sing it.
No, I'm not going to sing it now because then I'm going to get sued by Don Henley or somebody.
How many?
Let you get sued.
Yeah, right. Well, first of all, what I just did is not really singing. So this guy worded my lyrics on an interview. So you know. So how many songs are we looking at? Is it basically blues? Is it rock? What are we looking at here?
It's a blues rock album. So what we did is we've got some real traditional blues. You know, the one that Josh played on is a really slow blues called The Mercy of Love. And it's just down and dirty, 6.5 minutes of throwing down the blues. And then there's other songs that are more rock, you know, more the rock, I guess I'll call them blues rock riff songs. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's got the heavy riff in there, but it's bluesy. And there's a few like that. You know, I mean, I think it's a continuation of where I'm going with the sounds, but there's some stuff on this record that I think is very different than the last one, and it sounds a little more raw, a little more energy, and I think there's, yeah, I think it's going to be blues rock. Blues rock is pretty much where it's at, yeah.
Yeah. Now, another record that you're on, but I haven't seen or heard the light, that hasn't seen the light of day yet, is the Lita Ford record. What's going on with that?
Yeah, that's been another long process, and we have a bunch of songs already done that we recorded, at least 5 songs, and the rest of the album is pretty much sitting there. It's been a case of me and Lita getting together at the time and, you know, really having the time to finish it, but she's been lately really pushing me with her manager or agent guy, George, saying, hey, man, let's get this thing done. So I'm feeling like it's coming soon because we're ready to rock. And I know she got a new record deal or she's signing a record deal. So, you know, because when you go to make a record, you want to have somewhere to put it, right? I mean, it's just, you know, and I know she, like any artist, you know, sometimes you go through a transition and you move into a different label or a different publisher, you know, and you're kind of stuck in limbo, you know?
Yeah, I think she told me about this last time I talked with her, which was a few months ago. When I was talking to Bumblefoot last week, he did tell me that I asked him if he'd ever, like, you know, if he ever got called to join a band or anything like that outside of, you know, Guns N' Roses and whatnot. And he said that, Lita Ford called me from the stage in 2009 and said, hey, can you finish out this tour with me? And I guess he did. And I've talked to you about this before, but I know that you auditioned for Ozzy way back in the day. But how close did you ever come to joining any other bands?
Well, I mean, I auditioned for a few things. I think I auditioned for Ronnie James Dio. You know, I wanted to play with Dio.
I did not know that. So what year was this about?
It was when, do you remember when he hired that young kid? Was it Rowan?
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So, yeah. So that was, you know, what, late 80s?
Yeah,
right?
Way back. Yeah, back in the day. Yeah.
I would say late 80s. I'm thinking 88 maybe. But yeah, I auditioned with him and it was awesome. And Claude Schnell and Vinny Appice and Jimmy Bain, God rest his soul. Yeah. He passed. Jimmy, he passed.
Yeah, on one of those cruises.
Oh, so sad. But they thought I had the gig, man. They thought I had the gig. They really wanted me. But you know, Ronnie had some other idea in his mind of what he wanted. So I didn't get the gig. And then Steve Vai called me up to audition for David Lee Roth, you know. I ran into him at the gym. I think we were actually working out at the gym. That's right. at the Bally's Health Club in Hollywood, California.
So
how 80s is that?
So was that around the time that Steve Vai was leaving David Lee Roth?
Yeah, he was leaving. Yeah, he told me. He told me as we ran around in our pink jumpsuits, you know. He told me. He's like...
So let me get back to the Dio thing real fast. So it's Roland Robertson, by the way, and he was rolling with him for a couple of years there at the end of the 80s. But did you actually get to jam with Dio?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. I got to play with him in North Hollywood. I think it was at Leeds, And it was awesome, man. It was in a big, giant rehearsal room, and Ronnie came in, and he was just really nice, really cool. And I just remember him, you know, singing so well, man, just singing so good. And incredible guy. And then I didn't get the gig, and then every time I ran into him, he was always super nice to me.
He's always one of the nicest guys. I only met him a couple times, but man, he was so nice. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go see Hailstorm today, and Lizzie Hale told me a story once where she said that Dio said, you know, hey, listen, they'll never, you know, you'll never remember their names or their faces or the places where you meet people, but they'll always remember you, so you got to be nice to everyone. And see, just like you're talking about it right now, he was always nice.
No, that's true, man. I mean, you know, you don't have a lot of time sometimes when you meet people to leave an impression. So it's like, you know, if you're just being yourself, you're being normal, you're being cool, I think you're going to leave a better impression with people, you know, than bringing whatever bad news you had that day or, you know, whatever you're coming in off of a flight that's 14 hours delayed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We all have a bad day. Everybody has a bad day. So you just don't want to put your bad day on a fan that you're going to meet for 40 seconds, you know?
Yeah. Now, after trying out for all these, like, different guys and stuff, you know, obviously, you know, legends in rock, really. I mean, you know, Ozzy and Dio and David Lee Roth and whatnot and the whole thing like that. Is there just a time that came in your life where you're just like, you know what, I'm just going to go out on my own?
Yes, absolutely. It was right after the Heavy Bones album because we had signed with Warner Brothers. Frankie Benelli was the drummer. I thought we made an awesome record with Richie Zito producing. Everything was lined up, and then the grunge thing happened, and you know, we just couldn't get through the thing. So, so what do we do from there? And I just decided I wanted to be happy, you know, so I just took a solo career because it was really hard to keep a band together, you know, and keep everybody going in the same direction, you know, unless you're Aerosmith or Led Zeppelin or, you know, some band that just created organically. It's hard to do that. So I decided I was just going to see if I could go solo. And then I put out Hocus Pocus and had a hit, a top five Billboard hit. So I'm like, okay, here we go.
And yeah, and the rest is history. So you got this Neon Highway coming out in 2019. When was your last Christmas album that you made? What year was that?
The double disc has been out for, oh my God, probably eight or 9 years. I mean, I recorded some new Christmas music this past year. We've recorded a bunch of new Christmas music. We just haven't released it yet. The double disc has been what's been out for, God, I want to say 10 years, probably.
I was going to say, it's a long time. That's what I was wondering about, you know, if you're going to put another one out.
I am. We recorded a bunch of Christmas music, and I'm trying to get this new record label to agree to putting it out in the new year. And it's fun because I got one thing I'm working on. I'm working on this doing like a, I want to do like a, you know what I mean? And get that, like, you know, and get that, you know, I gotta learn it, but you know what I mean? And then go back and do the, do like the Nutcracker. How cool would that be?
That is cool. And plus, you know, there's, I was just thinking about this earlier that, like, you know, like, what's the movie with, that Tom Hanks does, the Polar Express? Like, there's songs, there's all sorts of songs, Christmassy type songs you could kind of put your own spin on from different, modern day Christmas movies, you know?
Totally. Absolutely. So I want to do that and maybe do, you know, maybe do a few I haven't done or do different versions of the same things I've done in a totally different style. But I would like to get a new holiday record out next year. I think that'd be fun. Even to do some blues, you know, some bluesy kind of Christmas tunes would be fun, too.
Yeah. Now, you're going to be here at Callahan's, like I said, December 8th in Auburn Hills. And the night before that, if you're in town, you're more than welcome to come and join me. But I'm going to be doing an interview with Tom Morello on stage in front of a live audience for 45 minutes or so. So have you come across Tom in your career?
And I get to come in. Oh my God, I would love to sit in on that conversation. Tom's amazing. And I'd love to have sit and listen to you and you guys chat.
Yeah, but have you ever like had a chance to jam with him or meet him or anything like that?
You know what? I haven't, man. Tom is one guitarist that I just haven't had to cross paths with him, at least at this point. But, you know, I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of what he does as a player and his innovativeness on the guitar and his, you know, he's got some strong, you know, political views and his, you know, the way he stands behind what he believes in. I have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah. Well, listen, Gary, I'll tell you what, I'm going to try to make it out to that show. Sans any hockey games or anything else, you know how my life goes, but I really want to try to get out there. And I think right now, as of now, I got nothing. So I think I might make the trek across town to see you. But real fast, I just wanted to say thank you so much for tweeting out the passing of Mike Clark with the Riff website. That was awfully nice of you. I know that those guys were, you know, especially, you know, Drew and Mike, that were a big part of your success here in Detroit. And that was nice of you to do that.
Oh, man, you kidding me, man? I was happy to do it. And it's just, I still can't believe, you know, he's passed. It's just, he's such a legend and a great guy. So, yeah, man, my heart's with all you guys.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you in a couple weeks here. And thank you so much for the time. And looking forward to the new record in 2019. Maybe two if we're lucky, huh?
Yes, man. That would be cool. We'll do a twofer.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Gary Hoey today on the Talking Rock podcast. And by the way, a little teaser, my friend Head is going to be on the podcast maybe as early as tomorrow.
So. Hey, that'd be cool.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice.
He's the only guy I've ever interviewed twice in one day.
Well, how'd that happen?
Because he had it's a funny story. I'd interviewed him at 4.
I'm glad you laughed.
No. I interviewed him at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, okay. While they were on tour. And after the interview, he goes, hey, where's this going to go? And I go, well, it's going to go on our website. It'll probably get picked up by some news sources, you know, rock websites and whatnot. He goes, well, can I listen to it before you put it on? I'm like, well, okay, no one's ever asked me that before. I'm like, yeah, sure. So anyways, he listens back to it. And there's a little bit more to the story than this, but I'll just keep it at the bare bones.
Sure, yeah.
He listens back to it, and he says, hey, can we do that again? And I'm like, okay, yeah, why? Well, what's wrong with it? He goes, well, you know, I was just waking up, and I sound like I'm tired. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well,
in the middle of summer. So I'm like, sure, yeah. Okay. So,
well, you and I both worked midnights at one point. You know, that's not that weird. You know,
I guess. But anyways, Head has this really killer. I don't want to say it's a biopic, but this documentary about his life his daughter's stuff. Man, it looks just so cool. And it's like, you know, people tend to forget about this, but when bands, you know. Look, you see your favorite band, they come through town, wherever you may be, and while you're, you know, tucking yourself in bed after a night of rocking out with your buddies and stuff, those guys are down the road to the next venue.
Yeah.
Could be hundreds of miles away, and they don't see their families, they don't see their bed, you know, and it's one of those things that, you know, yeah, rock stars living the rock star life is cool and everything and glorious and, you know, whatever, but there are things that we probably take for granted that they don't.
Yeah, there's a lot of sacrifice that comes with something like that.
Yeah, when they're out there on tour, and of course he had all sorts of drug problems, and I mean his life was in chaos. And I got to be honest, man. Like I said, I interviewed him twice. I got to know him pretty well that day, and he's a super good dude. So looking forward to talking.
Was he more awake for the second interview?
He was much more. Okay. Yeah, a little bit more energetic that time. I thought he was actually, to be quite honest, I thought he was fine the first time. But
it'd be hard to not take it personally if you re-recorded and he was like more tired. Am I boring you? Like, what's going on here?
No, that interview was great. So I'll see if I can dig that out. Actually, I took both the interviews and I kind of put them together. And
okay,
I Frankensteined them together.
Yeah.
So it's pretty funny stuff. But of course, like we're talking about Head and his documentary. It's not a biopic per se, but the guys from Queen, that biopic is just cranking for them, huh?
Yeah. No, we've been talking about this Bohemian Rhapsody movie, the biopic about Freddie Mercury and the band. You've sung praises to it on the podcast, and so has everyone else, Meltdown.
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Where have you been? Do I have to give you $10 to go watch the movie?
You might have to. I work in radio. but everyone else is in agreement with you, and everyone I've talked to has loved this movie. It is now the highest grossing music biopic in the U.S.
Yeah, topped out the Compton one, right?
Yes. Yeah. And it's the last, the article I'm looking at here, it may have even grossed more since.
Yeah.
$164.3 million.
Yeah, that's about what I saw, too. You know, the thing is, it was funny. Before I watched that movie, they play, like, I don't know, like 47 minutes of trailers.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, of course. Yeah.
One of them was for the Elton John biopic. So we might see more of these things coming up.
Yeah. I know it's kind of outside of the rock genre, but I saw Amy Winehouse. There's a biopic about her coming up. So there's a lot of biopics about musicians.
And Amy Winehouse. You know, look, she was 27 years old, and I don't know if, you know, that doesn't really have much interest to me.
Well, you don't connect with it, but the same point, you know, that really people being interested in these movies about musicians' lives.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's another one that's in the works. And we've actually got another biopic we'll get to later on in our news segment here.
But I wanted to add that the Queen biopic, somebody I know, and I'm trying to remember who it was just, it was my friend Wayne, was all thrown off because the timeline was all screwed up. In some of it, so you know, he couldn't get past that, and I have heard that is the big complaint, is that you know, it kind of made him out when they were going to play Live Aid, like they had just gotten back together and stuff, when actually they were out on tour and then they played Live Aid and all this other stuff, and it I guess that was a little bit fudged for Hollywood. So
yeah, well, as a comic book nerd, I get that. That's not how it happened in the book.
Of course. I know, this guy over here watches Walking Dead, he's like, well, that wasn't what's supposed to happen. I'm like, dude, I don't even know what's supposed to. I'm done.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I'm checking out. So.
Pretty much. But you know what? I think there's been a lot of people that saw that biopic, gained a new appreciation for Queen even afterwards. So it seems appropriate that Queen is back out on tour. Of course, obviously, you know, Freddie Mercury is no longer with us. Adam Lambert will be on stage with Queen.
Yeah, he toured with them last time, too.
Yes, he did.
I guess it's pretty good. So yeah. We'll see what happens with that. So,
well, Meltdown, how do you feel about supergroups?
I like some of them, yeah.
that's probably the right answer.
Some of them are fine, yeah.
Well, there's a new one to keep an eye on called Deadland Ritual, and it's got a pretty stacked lineup. You're looking at Geezer Butler. You've got Matt Sorum, Billy Idol guitarist Steve Stevens.
He's awesome.
And also Frankie Perez from Apocalyptica.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, that's cool. You know, Matt Sorum, he's in all sorts of supergroups. He does this thing called Kings of Chaos. And it's kind of like this band where they just, like, invite guys to play. So it might be, like, Billy Gibbons playing one day and, you know, Ian Ashbury, Billy Duffy. It's like, you know, all these guys just show up, Sebastian Bach. It's like this revolving door of singers. So, yeah, Matt Sorum's, you know, no stranger to doing stuff like this. But Geezer Butler, man, I'll tell you what, if you're a bass player out there, like maybe like a young bass player or something, and you're not that familiar, go back and listen to some of those Black Sabbath records, especially the early ones. I mean, with Ozzy and with Ronnie James Dio. But that, like for example, Heaven and Hell, the bass playing on that record is amazing. And Geezer Butler, I mean, just kills it. So yeah. If you get a chance, check that out.
I played a little bit of bass growing up and stuff like that. So there's nothing wrong with a bassist that just sort of doubles the rhythm guitarist. That really is your job, just make things thicker and fuller.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with that. But I love a bassist who's got personality, you know, like him. You got like a Cliff Burton, you know, as just I love it when you get Ryan Martini from Mudvayne is one of my favorites.
Mudvayne, that band is like off the charts.
Off
when it
the
comes
charts
to talent.
And all of them phenomenally talented, but Ryan Martini among them, of course. But
I'm hearing, you know, not to get off on a tangent on that, but I thought I heard some rumblings about those guys possibly getting back together. In
that
the
would be sweet.
It would be great.
Yeah.
I loved Mudvayne.
Yeah, me too. I would love to hear that. But this Deadland Ritual band we were just talking about, they are out there. They've got their social media accounts like Instagram and stuff if you want to look them up. But there's been no formal announcement for a new album, but it's definitely someone to keep an eye on here in 2019. We mentioned Queen earlier. How about Queens of the Stone Age? Completely different bands. They just happen to have Queen in it. But there is a very special limited edition Christmas single coming from Queens of the Stone Age. It'll be available on a 7-inch vinyl directly from QOTSA.com, their website. But it's like a version of Silent Night. I think there's a spoken Night Before Christmas on there as well. But it's actually going to be, proceeds for the single will actually benefit a charity, the Sweet Stuff Foundation. If you want to pick this thing up, it'll be available digitally on December 7th, which is coming up here. And also the limited edition vinyl will be released on December 14th.
Yeah, I thought they were going to cover Baby It's Cold Outside, since everybody's losing their mind over that.
Yeah.
It's like, please stop with that nonsense. So that's cool. Yeah, and of course, we just had Gary Hoey. He's looking at, recording some new stuff for Christmas stuff for next year as well, too. So, hey, final thing. I see you got a Nikki Sixx story. What's funny about this is that, so Steel Panther was in town.
Yeah.
And on the podcast last week, Satchel from Steel Panther, I asked him if there's any bands, because, you go see, I've seen, everyone from David Draymer from Disturbed to Scott Ian from Anthrax jump up on stage. I mean, the bands just love these guys. When they played Rock in the Range a few years ago, like the side of the stage was filled with bands just watching Steel Panther, right?
Yeah.
So I said to him, hey, is there any bands that, just don't like you guys or, whatever, just don't get your joke or whatever?
Sure, yeah.
And they said that when Def Leppard took them on tour with Motley Crue, that Motley Crue just hated them and does not like them. And so, and I had heard that before and I kind of forgot about that. He says, yeah, for whatever reason, they didn't really get the joke, or they thought they were the butt of the joke or whatever, right? So anyway, so I go to watch Steel Panther last week, and their bass player, Lexi, is on sex rehab. Did you see that? He's out of the tour.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah,
no.
he's at sex rehab.
Okay.
So they're hoping when he gets back, he has better sex.
Good,
so
yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's according to their presser.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they bring in this guy, Spider. And so Spider is in there, and I didn't realize it at the meet and greet until I saw him on stage. They dress him up just like Nikki Sixx. I was like, holy crap.
I like that. I got to tell you, I got nothing against Motley Crue, but if they hated me, I think it would actually bring me pleasure. I think I would enjoy it.
I got to be honest. Nikki Sixx has always been really nice to me. And
I'm sure he's a great guy, but if he could hate me, that would be great. I would love to add that to my resume.
I did an interview with Mick Mars one time, which was fantastic. One of the most underrated guitarists of that era.
Yeah.
And so, I got nothing bad to say about Motley, but that was hysterical.
I want that to be my resume, on-air personality, voiceovers, producer, hated by Motley Crue. It would be great.
Kind of like my Twitter was with Blocked by Gene Simmons.
Exactly, yeah.
You should have unblocked me.
You should have had that on your profile.
Meltdown, I did.
Afternoon Drive.
I did.
Yeah, I love
until
it.
Until he blocked me. Like if you would search out Gene Simmons, my thing would come up.
I love that.
So, anyways, enough about that. So,
yeah.
Nikki Sixx,
Nikki Sixx. Now, remember, not all that long ago, they did their whole, wrap-up tour, their retirement or whatever. The thing to remember, of course, about that tour that Motley Crue did was it was a retirement from touring. It didn't say anything about making new albums.
Right.
Well, Nikki Sixx has officially stated he started working on a new album recently, and he's actually got, he calls it, a trilogy project for 2019.
Mm.
Unfortunately, there's not a lot of more details than that. Is one of those projects a new 6 a.m. album? We don't know.
I'm sure that's probably in the works, but those guys are working on the Dirt soundtrack and stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so a trilogy. A trilogy of projects is what we've got, but something new from Nikki Sixx. And, of course, you mentioned Dirt, which is talking about biopics, the biopic. We do have a release date now for the Dirt Motley Crue biopic on March 22nd.
Yeah, and that's according to Vince's
according
Twitter.
According to Vince, that is correct. Yep.
So, Nikki Sixx is never one of these guys that just, take vacations and sit around and do nothing. He takes pictures. He's, he produces bands. He does all sorts of stuff. So we'll see what happens. 6 a.m. is pretty good, man. DJ Ashbaugh is great. We'll see what happens
with
that.
It'd be nice to hear something new from them. Hopefully that's one of the trilogy projects he's talking about.
Yeah, I got to be honest. Maybe I'm a slappy, but I'm really looking forward to seeing this Dirt biopic. Motley Crue is the first, the second band I ever saw live. The first band was a band called Wasted, who opened up for Motley, who were opening up for Ozzy in 1984 on the Bark at the Moon tour. And it's just one of those things you just never forget, And in the book, The Dirt, Tommy Lee talks about that specific show, if you can believe it. Yeah, because it was the first time he'd ever seen snow, and there was a lot of it. It was January 28th, 1984. And so then, apparently, some guy comes up to him after the show and they're backstage doing their meet and greet or whatever, and he comments on Tommy Lee's girlfriend's nether regions. And he's like, what? He's like, yeah, your girlfriend, she's pretty hot. You know, she's got a pretty nice, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, Tommy slugged the guy. And he's like, whoa, and the management gets, dude, what's going on? You know, the whole thing. He goes, whoa. You know, the guy's like, hey, man. He goes, hey, yeah, your girlfriend, whatever her name was at the time, sold some sex pictures of them to this Celebrity Skin magazine. Because she wanted to get married, and she was trying to make money for the rings and whatnot, and she didn't tell Tommy about this. So Tommy leaves the venue and rushes over to like a 7-Eleven or something, you know, gets to the magazine aisle, and there it is, and opens up like, what the? So, of course, that didn't go over well, you know, with Tommy.
Yeah, and it was foreshadowing for his future, too. I mean, it got much more graphic from there.
That is the truth. I got to be honest, you know, if I was like Tommy, you know, I'd be, those pictures would be everywhere. You couldn't escape them.
Just walking around dragging it behind you.
All right, Slayer, give your socials out. Let's go.
At Albeck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, thanks for listening. At Meltdown WRAF and at Talkin' Rock 1. Talkin' Rock with 1. There we go. I'll get that right. Hey, feel free to leave a voicemail as well. 248-586-2988. And, of course, the five stars. Hey, got to thank you guys for giving the five-star reviews, man. That is much appreciated. Thanks so much for checking out Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. We will be back to do it very soon, hopefully with our boy Head from Korn. See, I probably already jinxed it.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.